there is some magic to their music. I've spent 4 months now playing these songs over and over and over and over again, rehearsing them and then doing take after take. And I'm not tired of any of them. There's something about them that just, you don't get bored of it.
That was Hamish Patel talking about his new movie Yesterday, which we're going to talk about today. I'm Neil Rosen.
You do not want to hold his hand.
Welcome to Sitting Around Talking Movies. I'm joined, as always, by Bill Brigoli.
This could be the last time. Maybe the last time. No, in Bill McCuddy's apartment.
It is the last time in this. And I'm Bill McCuddy, the fifth Beatle. Let's talk about Yesterday, because a lot of people love it. And I'm
Let
not one of those people.
About. Although I'm sure you've seen commercials for months. Through some strange cosmic occurrence, a gentleman played by Hamish Patel wakes up in a world that's the present day, with one exception. Well, actually, there's a couple of exceptions, but the main exception is that the Beatles never existed. He's the only one that remembers their songs, and he's a struggling, mediocre singer-songwriter. So he starts playing their songs, takes credit for writing them, and because those are the greatest songs in the world, becomes an overnight sensation and is heralded as a musical brilliant guy. And there's also a love story aspect of this as
Lily
well.
Lily Collins.
A girl that has been with him through his...
talking to the mic, Neil.
Through his Salad Day years.
And because this is written by Richard Curtis, who gave us Four Weddings and a Funeral and Love Actually,
and
it's unrequited, the love between this manager
and directed
and
by
Hamish.
Danny Boyle, who did Slumdog Millionaire and 127 Hours and many other films.
Millions.
So there's a great pedigree on this.
28 Days Later.
What's that? Yes, that's right. So, by the way, our television show, which we talked about this on extensively.
Hashtag shameless
talking
plug.
Pictures with Neil Rosen is on CUNY TV this Friday at 9:30 p.m. Also repeated on the weekends. Just go to cuny.tv.edu, or you could even go to cuny.tv, and you will see the channels that it's on, depending on your cable system. I will be sending out links. And also this Friday, we're on All Arts, the PBS station, and you could Google that as well. And you could see past episodes. They're running highlights of our past episodes all the entire month of June.
If you don't know what channel that is, just go to 1500 on your TV and just start scanning up.
It's channel 144 on Optimum. It's channel 1276 on Spectrum. But there's a lot more channels, so just check that out. Anyway, on the television show, I mentioned that I think this is a joyous film. I think it's very sweet. I think the premise is very clever. I think Hamish Patel does different takes on the Beatles songs, and they're very enjoyable to watch. I like it. You know, if you buy into it, and you got to buy into it, because if the Beatles never existed, the world kind of is the same. Ed Sheeran is in it. Everything is kind of the same.
Ed Sheeran is as Ed Sheeran.
Yes. So nothing would really be the same, since the Beatles changed so many things. So if you just go along and take, as I said, if you take that Ticket to Ride, you know, I think that you'll enjoy Yesterday. And
let me tell you why you're wrong. The problem with this movie, for my money, is that yes, it's the music's good. We know that. It's enjoyable on one level, but there's a problem with it. The problem is that this script by Richard Curtis, who, as we mentioned, does things, he does ensemble movies really well when there are a lot of balls in the air. When he has one big ball in the air like he does here, he's not as gifted. And I think that
127 hours is one ball in the air.
That's Danny Boyle.
Oh, you're
We're talking about
Richard
Curtis.
I'm sorry, you did mention Curtis. My apologies.
So the problem is, as a screenwriter, he has painted himself into a corner. He's put his protagonist in the unenviable position of being the guy who rips off the Beatles. And we have to like him doing that. And for that to work, he has to like doing it, and he doesn't. He gets a pass from some, I'm not going to give too much away, but there are two big moments in this movie that try and forgive.
One gives chill, sends
yeah,
chills
one's,
down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But they're designed from a structure standpoint in screenwriting to get him off the hook, and they don't do it for my money.
Well, I think it's terrific. Again, I saw it at the premiere of the Tribeca Film Festival back in the middle of April, and I was, you know, I won't say that I knew nothing about it. I mean, pretty much everybody, if you've seen the commercials, knows the premise. But I just thought it was just a lot of fun. And as far as painting himself into a corner, I went along for the ride. I kind of liked it. I took that long and winding road.
But okay.
Not
but,
so long, but Ronnie. But I look, enough with the Beatles.
He feels guilty.
So Kate McKinnon plays his manager, and she's really funny because
not doing anything she hasn't done on SNL.
She's only in it for the money, right. And you know, that's making him miserable. But I think the point that he's miserable, and I won't give away what happens in the movie, is kind of taking the journey with this guy. And I think his character is very likable, and I think the Lily, the one who plays the love interest,
Lily Collins,
is delightful. And you know, and the music is so good that when he plays all these
well,
songs,
that's a given.
But here's the thing, you know, when he starts playing these Beatles songs, and everybody's going like, "Oh my God, did you just write that? That's amazing." He goes on James Corden. I mean, he's making appearances. I mean,
another thing. That appearance appears to be a dream sequence that doesn't really explain itself, because two of the Beatles supposedly show up on that sequence, and then. That's edited badly.
I love the movie, and I highly recommend it.
Would you watch a movie about a guy who picked up a credit card he found on the street and started using it all over town and enjoyed himself because he was buying things, but in the end realized he had to give all the stuff back? Because that's basically this movie.
Depending on how it was written and who stars in it, it could be funny and interesting. I mean, you know, that's so vague. I mean, it could be horrible and miserable and what a horrible thing to do. Or if it was written and constructed in such a way that, you know, like the guy was poor and a homeless guy and all of a sudden, you know, I mean, you know, yeah, there's a million possibilities. All right. It's all in the writing. You know what I mean? So I think the writing.
Bill, you haven't seen Yesterday.
Yeah. And you know what? I saw the trailer. And when I saw the trailer, I said, I don't want to see this.
Okay. So you're with me. All right. Good.
All right. Let's move on. Let's move on. Bill McCuddy, Bill Brigoli saw a couple of movies.
Yeah.
You saw the new Spider-Man
movie. I did. Spider-Man Far From Home.
Talk to me about it.
Where is he? He's in Tokyo or London or where?
They go to Europe.
Okay.
But it's Tom Holland again. And they assume that you've seen Avengers Endgame. This play takes place after everybody returned to Earth. Remember when they were gone?
Uh-huh.
Including these high school kids. There's a very funny sequence where the high school basketball team is playing a game. Suddenly the band returns to Earth in the middle of the stadium with the basketball players. But they refer to that incident as the blip. And it took 5 years. So the high school students in this were all blipped. Tom Holland and all his buddies and Daya and everybody else.
So let me ask the Neil Rosen question. Do you have to have seen Avengers Endgame?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
You really
that's
do.
That's what you just said, wasn't it?
Yeah. And Tony Stark is deceased. And
yeah, they even mentioned that in the trailer.
That
secret's out the door.
Yeah,
that's spoiler.
So they do. So regardless of all, they go to Europe, and they
with the Griswolds.
No, the Griswolds with two really nerdy teachers as their chaperones, and these guys are pretty funny. All the kids get first they land in Venice, and then they go to Prague, and then they go to Auschwitz, and they look up Spider-Man's roots in the Holocaust. No, I'm not. No, they don't. But
this sounds like it could be horrible. Is it horrible?
No, it's actually
they don't go to Auschwitz.
They don't go to Auschwitz.
That was your attempt at a joke. Okay.
That was deadpan. That really
nice.
That was a good.
Well
deadpan.
Done.
Yeah.
So how is it?
It's fun. When they go to Europe, all hell breaks loose. Nick Fury has to come. Spider-Man, who didn't want. He didn't bring. He doesn't even pack his Spider-Man suit because he says, "I want to be with my high school friends." He's 23 years old, mind you. Now,
so it's one of those sneak off at night and do the Spider-Man thing while
no
one's looking.
Actually, they
and
make
be
him
back
they,
in bed before
they make
the...
him. They make him a black suit. Nick Fury and his friend. They make him a black suit.
Why?
So he doesn't look like. See, he's afraid all his high school kids will, all his high school friends will put two and two together and realize. Hey, Spider-Man's here. We're here. Whenever we're at home, Spider-Man's there. Spider-Man must be one of us. He's afraid. So he's made a black suit. And
so they all go, hey, there's a guy in a black suit who does everything Spider-Man does.
Yeah, actually, they call him.
And he's
there's probably
group.
A spider on it.
No, there isn't. And they one of his friends is covering for him, one of the kids who's on to the fact that he's Spider-Man. And
that's the black kid, right?
No, another kid. Yeah. And he says, that's the Night Monkey. So his character.
The Night Monkey?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, that's as a joke.
Nickname?
As a joke. Yeah, okay. I mean, but that's. There's a lot of humor in it. It's fun.
I think Howard Cosell lost a job calling somebody that, but all right.
Yeah, well.
And you would. Tom Holland's good?
He's very good, but but he's 23 years old, and this is, and he does a really good job of imitating a high school student. But this isn't going to last that much longer.
Was there an end credit sequence?
I don't know. I ran out to get my phone because they took all our phones.
Okay.
So I don't know about that. But
so you're saying yes.
It's worth seeing. It's a good summer popcorn kind of movie.
Funny?
And it's very funny. Actually, there's more humor than, oh, my God, the world's going to end.
Well, you know.
And he's funny.
And he's
like
good.
He does, like in the Endgame and the other movies where he was, you know, kind of throwing off lines and funny. He's like,
he's very
cool.
Good. Samuel Jackson is actually a big part of the humor in this, too.
Oh, really?
The thing I liked about the first three, yes, three, although people have problems with the third one, Tobey Maguire Spider-Man's, is that there was an element of humor in there. And he was this kid that was dumped on in school, and there was this revenge thing when he became Spider-Man. He was able to, like, go back after the bullies.
This is built around the fact that he wants to tell Zendaya's character that he likes her.
Okay.
And he's telling people, look, he buys this little piece of jewelry for her in Europe. He's going to tell her in the Eiffel Tower that he loves her. And they don't get to the Eiffel Tower. And the piece of jewelry becomes secondary. And it's very cute.
The humor was missing from the Andrew Garfield.
Well, don't worry, there's plenty of humor in this.
Miscast, but like Superman 2, when the guy lost his powers and he gets his powers back and he gets the revenge. That's what I liked about the Tobey Maguire
thing. Yeah, this is kid humor. It's high school kid type humor.
Okay. All right. You saw Annabelle Comes Home.
Yeah, that's right. With our friends Vera Farmiga.
I like Vera Farmiga.
Yeah, Patrick Wilson. And it's got three kids in it. And this takes place after The Conjuring, when the Wilsons, Ed and Lorraine, take the Annabelle doll home so that it won't cause any more problems out in the real world. And they put it in their artifacts room in their house. This room with all sorts of other creepy things from other, whatever
movies
they call it.
From other
other movies, other things, other creepy haunted things. And they put several locks on the door and tell their kid, don't go in there. Well, they have to run off. They hire a babysitter with the kid, and the babysitter's best friend comes over. She suffered a family tragedy, and she knows about the Wilsons and what they've been up to, and she finds her way into the room, messes around with Annabelle, and all hell breaks loose.
Now, do you have to have seen The Conjuring in order to understand?
All you got to know is don't open that door.
Okay.
And that's it. And it's it takes, unfortunately, it takes, people had a good time when I went it. They applauded several times. Some of the action sequences got applause. But I kept thinking to myself, if I was watching this Home Alone, I wouldn't have enjoyed it as much, and I would be fast-forwarding through the first hour of it. It has a lot of pacing problems in the first hour.
Would you recommend the movie to anybody?
Yeah, to fans of The Conjuring and that sort of thing.
Have they amped up the violence or the blood?
There's very little blood in it. It's just jump scares. The soundtrack, I mean, kudos to the guys who do audio mixing. You wonder why that's an Academy category until you see a movie like this. They
really?
Did a lot of work.
It's worth seeing just maybe just for that.
Well, the sound work is really good. I work in radio,
guy.
So I appreciate
you
that.
You do the
stuff.
Sound for us.
I don't know.
Who else would the regular layman appreciate the sound?
They'd probably jump in their seats because a few times the things go.
I have no interest. How about you, Bill McCuddy?
No, I'm not a big fan of
this.
Yeah,
it's not. It's a
genre.
It's a,
there was an article in the New York Times last Sunday about how they had all these people checking in on whether or not they believed that movie theaters would exist 10 years from now. And the general consensus was kind of that they wouldn't. And I take issue with that. I don't know that that's necessarily going to be true. I mean, I know that when television came out in the late 1940s, they said that's the end of movies. And yes, there is a movie, The Last Picture Show, that a lot of movie houses did close. But movie theaters did stay around. And then when color TV came out, they said that's the end of movie theaters, and it was not. And then I remember marquees of movie theaters said stop pay cable when cable TV came out and HBO, and that was not the end of movie theaters. And I understand now with Netflix releasing things the same day that they're going into theaters, if they go into theaters at all, that that's diminishing things. But I still think that when you have an event movie like, you know, Avatar or Star Wars or, you know, just a movie or even a Toy Story 4 where people want to see this on a big screen with all the effects and all that stuff, I think maybe there'll be some diminished movie, and a lot of movie theaters have gone away.
You're not wrong. I see where you're going with this. You're not wrong. The problem is there's not going to be enough of that. And the problem is also that more of what people want to see doesn't require a big screen. So you're right, for special occasions.
Somebody, I don't think people are going to want to see Star Wars on
Of course, but that doesn't mean that it's going to keep all theaters open. I think a lot of theaters are going to close.
I agree, but I'm saying that I don't think they'll completely go away.
One of the people interviewed in that piece said something really interesting. It said, millennials don't go to the movies, they go to a movie. So in other words, they don't have a Friday night that they just go to whatever's at
what's
the
playing?
Multiplex.
What's playing?
What's playing? Let's
Remember
go.
What's playing?
Yeah.
Remember that?
They don't do that. They go to a movie that they want to see because, like you said, they have the sense that it should be in a communal situation. I don't... There were a lot of interesting pull quotes out of that piece. And one of them was, did you like the two...
I had a few problems with it, actually. Just the way it was put together. You know, it was like one person and another person commenting.
Yeah,
you get a feeling.
People.
Yeah, I don't know. It was a little hard for me.
Do you think movie theaters in 10 years from now will exist? And I'm not saying as many movie theaters, but do you think there will be movie theaters that will exist?
A few, but very few. I mean, look at real estate now.
Well, that's Manhattan. I mean, if you're in Iowa.
No,
I think he
means anywhere. I mean, anywhere. They take up a lot of space and they have to be profitable and... more and more and more, the concession stand is the only place that they make any money.
They've always made the most money with selling the soda and the popcorn.
Somebody does a joke about that's why it's all in jewelry cases. But like I think the Paris closed, the Ziegfeld around the corner from us. Paris is closing at the end of August.
Is that true?
Yeah. So that's like an iconic little art house theater.
Hey, Pavarotti is playing there right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Pavarotti has air rights, and I'm sure they went for some big
money. I didn't know that. That's
really
upsetting.
Yeah, it is upsetting. I found that out
just
the
other day.
That's like
one of the classic movies, like you said, one of those standalone, not multiplex classic. I mean, I went to a movie there with, like, you know, my mom, like, I don't know, almost 50 years ago. I mean,
well, my first date with my wife was there. We saw Truffaut's Day for Night. And
a lot of them, like the Beekman Theater, which is on the Upper East Side, although they renamed a twin theater the Beekman Theater. It's not that original standalone Beekman Theater was kind of a classic. That's gone. On Third Avenue, they have Cinema 1, 2, 3, which was originally Cinema 1 and 2. Next door to that was the Baronet Carnet. That was gone. Further down, Third Avenue, around the corner, you had other
ones.
Well,
I don't care. I don't care if people know where I live now because I'm moving, but we're on 7th Avenue as we talk to you now, just south of Central Park.
We're across the street from Carnegie Hall.
From Carnegie Hall. So if you walked down 50 years ago from my apartment, 7th Avenue, to Times Square, you'd probably pass 30 or 35 movie houses.
Well, what is gone
They were
is-
next door to each other, one after the other after the other. And whenever you see an old movie and they're driving up a street and all those movie marquees are behind them, and Taxi Driver, any of the older stuff than Taxi Driver, it's always 7th Avenue because that's where they all were.
Well, except for maybe the Film Forum and Cinema Village, two theaters in Manhattan, there used to be all these revival houses in Manhattan where you could see, like, you know...
second, third run.
Yeah, you know, Theater St. Mark's, which is now a legitimate theater, not a movie house. And, I mean, even Lincoln Plaza Cinemas is gone. They weren't playing revivals, but you could see, like, the films of Preston Sturges, two-week run, or the films of Billy Wilder, or the films of Alfred Hitchcock, or the films of Truffaut.
All right, with apologies to everyone listening to this outside of Manhattan, this is depressing that the Paris is closing. But what else is happening? What's going
on? Okay, so there's a... Okay, so anyway, so... Bill Bregoli, you think the movie theaters will exist before we move on?
Just a couple.
And just a couple.
I took a bus ride to Boston not too long ago, and we were on the highway going by all these malls. The malls weren't even in good shape, and the theaters next to the malls were all closed. And
malls
I knew
are,
a lot of those theaters.
Malls are just
theaters
places.
I used to put their advertise when I was in advertising movies. I used to put their little logos
in the bottom of the
newspaper.
They're all gone. Before we move on, I have another thing to talk about. They will be reduced tremendously. But I think all of those indie movie houses where you could see that stuff on Netflix, Hulu, YouTube, Amazon Prime, I think a lot of that stuff's going to go away. Okay, before we go, The Loudest Voice is a miniseries starring Russell Crowe as Roger Ailes.
Which, for those of you who don't know, was the guy who discovered me, gave me a job 25 years ago. I actually won a contest that he dreamt up and was on the Today Show the next day after I won. And so this guy was like a mentor, godfather to me, and so I haven't seen this. Yes, tell me about it.
Okay, it's terrific. First of all, Russell Crowe is amazing. He gets let go from NBC, where he was doing not MSNBC, CNBC, and he talks to them about the fact that they want a non-compete, where he can't work for another network. And he signs that, but there's nothing in that clause that says that he can't work, he can't create his own network. He just can't work for an existing network. So what happens is he creates Fox News. And somebody says in this thing, well, who are we going to appeal to? We're going to appeal to everybody, right? All the people that want to watch the news. And he goes, no, we're not going to appeal to everybody. Everybody serves all the everything has a liberal bent. CNN and ABC, CBS, NBC, MSNBC, they all have liberal bents. We're going to appeal to the other half of the country that has a conservative bent. And he really goes off the rails. I mean, he starts out, you know, you got to admire that the guy is a genius for thinking this up, but he really becomes a really mean guy. I don't know if he was a mean guy when you were working for him, Bill McCuddy.
No, he was a nice guy. But, and I didn't see, by the way, any of the stuff that's portrayed in this. And
he's
I'm not trying to be stupid about it. I know it went on. And I'm sorry that his career ended that way. I was in his will. He left me Gretchen Carlson. And she's in the other room right now.
She plays Naomi Watts. Naomi Watts plays her in the movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, she's, you know, he's a sexual predator. His ideas are like he's looking at the camera when they're doing test runs before they launch Fox News, and he's going, why aren't I not seeing her legs? Move the camera down. Let me see her legs. It's all about putting, you know, beautiful women on the air. And
so this would pair nicely.
Sean Kennedy was a house painter. And he was like, I like this guy. He hosts a show in somewhere in the Midwest in like, you know, Akron or something like that. Yeah, and then Sean doesn't know what he's doing, and he works with Sean Hannity. And he goes, I got this comic guy, Ray Combs. Let's put him. He's like, you want to put a comic on? I run Fox News. Don't tell me what to do. You know, and it's
does my name come up at all yet?
No, okay. Not yet. But it's just kind of interesting.
Wait a minute. Ray Combs never worked for us, and I was a comic, so maybe I'm supposed to be Ray Combs.
Hannity and Combs.
Oh, that was the comic. Oh, yeah. His name wasn't Ray Combs. That's Ray Combs is a comic.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
No, you're thinking of Alan Combs.
Alan Combs. I'm so sorry. You're right. Alan Combs. But, you know, what you see is that this guy won't take shit from anybody. He is so, like, headstrong, balls out. I mean, even Rupert Murdoch, his boss, whenever Rupert Murdoch goes, I think you're going a little too far here, who's Australian, horrible Australian
good,
accent.
Really good.
You know, Roger. He's like, well, then maybe you just don't want me. I'm leaving. Like, in other words, he's
no,
just...
No, he was that way.
I'm running Fox News. I'm doing this my way. And if you don't like it, you're fired. You're out of here. You're gone. You know,
is it well done?
What? It's really well done. It's fascinating. The fact that you worked for Fox News for how many years? 10 years?
15.
15 years.
You well, worked for him for almost 17
Well, it
years.
Would be very interesting for you to watch it and for you to tell us if you think that Russell
I will
Crowe's
catch up, and next week we'll talk about
right.
that. If, and if, what if else What else is
next
opening
week
next week?
We also have a Crawl.
Crawl?
I just want to say one thing.
Oh, brother.
That's an alligator.
That next week I want to know when you watch it, because I think he's phenomenal, Russell Crowe, but I don't know if it's accurate since I don't know Roger.
Well, I've seen the trailers. He's not doing the voice right. But
well, he says
he looks
on Howard
like
Stern
him.
That he did not want to do the voice right. But I want to know if the depiction is accurate, and that's what you can tell us next week.
Right.
What's coming up next week?
Crawl. What is
and
that?
It's something called Stuber. Crawl is
Stupid?
No, Stuber. I'm seeing
Stuber.
That Tuesday night.
Right.
Are you guys coming to that?
No, I haven't been invited. But
that actually looks funny, about the Uber driver that gets hijacked.
Oh, yeah,
it's
yeah,
kind
I
of,
heard about this.
It's like the movie Collateral,
okay.
But it's like funny.
Yeah, actually, I think I did get invited. Anyway, yeah. Crawl is about a town in Florida overrun with alligators.
Oh, yeah, I saw the trailer to that. Yeah. Wow.
I mean, you ever going to do a press day for that.
Did you ever see the movie where the sharks invade a mall in Australia?
Yeah.
They jump up onto the shelves. It's like the most absurd. It's the guy from Nip Tuck. I forgot his name.
Right.
But it's what a piece of shit. It is a
and
horrible
remarkably
horrible
based on a
well,
true
this
story.
Alligator thing sounds like it would be along the same lines.
We'll see.
All right, happy 4th of July to all of you. Our country wouldn't be here without people like Neil Rosen and Bill Bregoli.
And what do we do here, Bill?
We salute you, Neil. For no good reason. We see the bad movies so you don't have
we
to.
We do. And if you
Crawl
reach
sounds
me,
like one of them.
You could reach me at Neil Rosen Apples at Twitter. If you want to reach Bill McCuddy.
At Bill McCuddy on
and
Twitter.
If you want to reach on Instagram, Bill Bregoli, you could reach him.
On Instagram. There you go.
At Bill Bregoli?
Yeah.
All right. Well,
say goodbye. I got to go to work.
Thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. We'll sit around talking movies again with you next week.